Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Wastelands of California. My name is Michael, and I am a mere figment of your imagination. And don't believe what they tell you when they say salvation is only found in dreams. First time listeners out there, this is a very different kind of show, a place where you don't feel so alone. No matter what it is you do choose to believe, we do admire you for your curiosity. Joining me tonight is Ronnie Dawson, a veteran of the program. He's here to share his experience with all of us once again. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for allowing me into your hearts and into your minds. Here we are again on a night like this. Happy belated 4th of July, by the way. I hope you got a chance to spend time with your families or friends, whatever the case. I don't know about any of you out there, but I don't really care much about fireworks all that much. I'm sure many of you are still forced to do that sort of thing. Some of you have kids. Some of you have someone else's kids you have to take care of. I get it. I know some of you are held hostage. Don't worry. The sun will shine on you again, by the way. Someday, I think. I received some feedback from listeners out there recently. Some of you were concerned about me going for a drink at the Spotlight 29 Casino. Listen, I'm all right. I'm not dead. Obviously, I'm right here. Did you people miss me, by the way? I missed all of you, to be perfectly honest. I'm beginning to feel quite fortunate that I have this sort of platform. You know, without it, I'm sure I would have lost my sanity by now. Yes, it's one of those things that keep me grounded in this strange human experience. That and choking people. I'm quite in my element when I'm doing that. Now, we are a few moments away from talking to the guest, Mr. Ronnie Dawson. He's got such a wild story to share with us. First-time listeners out there, I'm glad you're here. This is a good one. Now, without further ado, let's get down to brass tacks and bring in Mr. Dawson. And joining me right now on the line is Mr. Ronnie Dawson. How are you, sir?
Hello. I'm grateful to be here, Michael. It's good to talk to you again.
It's very good to talk to you, sir. And first and foremost, I must say, I'm quite excited to have you back on the program. The last time you were here, Ronnie, was, I'm thinking, 2017, 2018. My God,
yeah.
do you even remember what you were doing back in 2017, 2018? I don't.
Yeah, I remember what was going on, but I remember we ran out of time. So often I run out of time when I'm telling my story because it's so stinking long, you know?
I love your story, and that's one of the reasons why I brought you back on. I wanted you to tell us all about that story And my God, back when life was somewhat normal, you know, the good old days.
Right.
Yeah, hot damn. Good times indeed. Before COVID BC, in other words.
Right, right. You know, I had some new experiences that you hadn't heard about, as well as the stuff we had talked about last time. And I became quite famous since we've talked last time. You know, I was invited to go to the Laughlin UFO MegaCon this year and be a featured speaker. So it was my first time to go on stage and tell my story in front of a live crowd. And that was
something
nervous
else.
Nervous and exciting.
Yeah, of course. A lot has changed, and you've been quite busy. You've been a very busy man, Ronnie. You are going out there to conferences now. People are wanting to interview you.
The Ronnie Dawson UFO story book is actually.
Love that.
Man, I made a whole $48 in royalties last month. I'm making ice cream money, not really new car money, but.
Well, yeah, you're working on it. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, it's I've never even spent any money advertising the book, so it's almost like a best kept secret, you know.
That's right.
People are starting to finding out about it, and they're making purchases. You know, you can get it on Barnes and Noble, you can get it on Amazon, and people are starting to find out and get that thing, you know. So,
right, and tell me about the conference, by the way. I have been kind of out of the loop in regards to the, you know, UFO circuit, the talk circuit. So I'm not really quite sure what's going on with those folks anymore. You got to fill us in here, Ronnie.
Yeah, everybody's been kind of doing online conferences, and the Laughlin UFO MegaCon was like the first in-person event. Nevada dropped all its restrictions, and you were able to go up there without a mask and all this stuff. So it was like back to normal, like back to
the good old days.
Major conference that was back to normal, you know.
So you were in there without a mask. No one hassled you or anything like that.
No. I've had my vaccination, and a lot of people have. And I think if you didn't have your vaccination, you were supposed to be masked up. But if you had your vaccination, and nobody checked it anyway. I mean, but if you didn't have a mask, you were supposed to wear a mask. But nobody enforced it. So
was anyone coughing?
It was like the first big conference that was back to normal.
Was anyone coughing inside at all?
Not that I've seen, no. Except for some heavy smokers.
Oh, some heavy smokers. You know, I might even freak out a little bit if someone started to like coughing during the middle of the conference. If they just had like a coughing attack, could you believe that? Would it freak you out, Ronnie?
Not me, because I had my vaccination. You know, so
but you could still get
I'm
sick,
good,
though.
You know?
You could still get the new, you know, the new variant that they're saying.
Yeah. You know, you're always rolling the dice, I guess, when you get out in public anymore, you know, and that's something we're going to have to live with from now on. You know, it ain't going to go away, I don't think. You know?
I don't think so either. Life is a bit of a gamble. And just recently, you know, I went to a casino and I didn't wear a mask. You know, I went and sat down at the bar and drank some beers, you know, and I was like, my God, am I taking a gamble here? Some people say I was. Some people were saying, well, yeah, Michael, you were. You were, you know, kind of going nuts there, not wearing a mask, just letting it all hang out. And I thought, yeah, I'm living on the edge, no doubt.
Yeah, well, you know, they have this conference in the Aquarius Casino in Laughlin, Nevada. So we're right there inside a casino. And like I said, the alcohol they serve you so strong, it would kill.
It'll kill anything.
You might have in your mouth.
My God.
It's not even safe to smoke around some of their drinks, man. My God.
Yeah. And Ronnie, by the way, I have no idea what you think in regards to like COVID or anything that's been going on. You know, we haven't talked in so long. So I'm kind of curious what your thoughts and opinions are with, you know, all the things that have been going on, all the changes now. Where exactly is your mind now in regards to COVID and all the shit going on?
Well, it was kind of weird for me because in 2020, I had an ET encounter. I guess we'll get into it later, but they basically took my consciousness out of my physical body and they gave my physical body a vaccination.
What? And
they said to protect their interests.
Oh,
it was on the back of my left knee. I had a triangle mark and they didn't tell me exactly what it was for, but I was kind of, and it happened in February 2020, right about the time COVID was taking off.
Oh, shit.
And I almost just wonder if they didn't give me some kind of a COVID vaccination to protect me.
Wow.
They had a vested interest in me, and they didn't want to see me get messed up.
You know what's so crazy, Ronnie, is that my dad, you know, actually very early on, he threw this out there. He told me maybe COVID was probably released in order to prevent like some sort of alien takeover.
Yeah. It was kind of strange how they come in there in February and they give me that thing, you know, and they said it was to protect their interest, but they didn't say to protect their interest against what, you know. And I did have this mark, and I actually got a picture of the mark that on the back of my leg. Said, nobody's going to believe it if I don't get a picture of it.
You have a photo of that.
I actually got a picture of it. Yeah. So
did you say?
I went ahead. I got the vaccination as well because I was traveling on the airplane and traveling to Nevada, and I didn't want to have to wear a mask around the casino. And I didn't know for a fact. I thought they might be checking people for other vaccinations. So I went ahead and got one because I didn't want to take a chance.
I see.
But I never got it. I got pretty up close and personal with COVID-19, but with some people who had gotten it that were in close contact with me, and I never got it.
Have you been tested obviously you were tested, yeah.
Yeah, I was up close and personal with them, like just a few feet away from them and talking to them and other stuff, and I didn't get it. And we found out, like, you know, we found out like 2 days later, though, they had it, and they were up at the basketball game, and we were talking to them and sitting within 3 feet of them, you know.
Wow.
And I never got it. And I had a kid that got it here at the house, and never got it.
Oh, a kid. So, oh, you're like a grandson or whatever out there.
Yeah, I had one of the it was running rampant up in the high school up here, and we got two kids that go to school, so
yeah.
And one of them came home with it, and like I said, we tried to keep our distance, but that's kind of hard when you live in the same house and it's not that big a house, you know.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough. So,
yeah, and I didn't get it then either, so.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you are safe and you haven't gotten sick or anything like that.
Yeah, so maybe thanks to the ET vaccination, you know. But, you know, I told people, I said, man, if you want to test my blood or whatever, if you can find a cure for it, you know, but people just like got to roll their eyes like, yeah, right, yeah, sure, ET give you a vaccination. I was like, man, I'd share with everybody if somebody would believe me that I actually had one.
Yeah,
and do the research and the blood testing or whatever they wanted to do on it, you know.
Now, Ronnie, I wanted to take you back for a moment here. I did record a clip from the last time you were on the program many, many moons ago, and I recorded this clip of you saying, it's a very funny line that I recorded on like the specific little device, and you know, I did return that device, and there are like preset buttons on this like little recording, this audio recorder that I have. And on that audio recorder is this clip that I'm about to play for you. So, you know, when I, yeah. So whoever gets that digital recorder, they're going to be met with this audio clip of you saying this right here, Ronnie. This is pretty awesome. So after I play this clip, you're going to have to give us a backstory to this right here, Ronnie. Here we go.
Lady, is it okay if I have sex with your husband?
Let's hear that one more time.
Yeah.
Let's hear that one more time, Ronnie.
Lady, is it okay if I have sex with your husband?
Okay, Ronnie, that's one of my favorite clips in the world. Give us a backstory to that for the newer listeners.
Okay, the backstory to that was this happened. This was the August 2017 visitation. It was like I said, I've been seeing the UFOs for years, and I've seen the cattle abduction, and then I had the alien home invasion.
Right.
And then a year after that, I had the mothership fly over, and I had seen three UFOs in a 1 hour period. And like I said, I had seen them in my house. I had seen them up close and personal, but I had never had a conversation with them. But in August 2017, they basically, I'd been working that night, and I came home, and it was about 9 o'clock in the morning, and I was just sleeping away, man. I wasn't even dreaming. And all of a sudden I had this weird dream where there was two women that had to hold my arms and was pulling me. And I didn't know where they were pulling me, but I slipped out of their grasp, and I immediately fell back to sleep. And I didn't wake up, but I kind of woke up enough to say, wow, that was an odd dream. And then all of a sudden, I'm trying to go back to sleep, and all of a sudden they have me a second time. And this time they're pulling on me, and I look over and I see one of them's face, and she says to me in English, she says, "Help us." And so I'm struggling to get loose from whatever's holding me, and they're pulling on my arms as strong as they can. And they basically, I felt like they were pulling me out of a manhole, or I was stuck in the mud or stuck in something. And when I, when they pulled me loose, I was basically, they pulled my consciousness out of my sleeping body was actually what was going on. But it took me a little while to realize it. And, they pulled me out, and they, and one of them, they had my arms and stuff, and they were sitting there, and they, and the first thing I started thinking, my God, thank you. And they were going, you know, we're,
oh, you're back. Oh, really? We had a drop there, Ronnie. We kind of missed what you were saying there.
Ah, okay. Well, basically they said, we're not from your world. We've been watching you. We need to have a conversation. And I looked and I thought, okay, this is some girls. My wife's playing a joke on me or something. And I'm standing there in my room. I could see my room. I could see the light coming from my windows and stuff. I could see there's two females and they're dressed very oddly, it looks like. And I'm thinking, well, my wife is playing a joke on me or something. But I know all her friends. This is a small town. I don't know either one of these. You know, I'm like, well, this certainly isn't anybody I know. And I look, one of them is tall, slender, athletic, and has blue skin and short black hair and huge freaking eyes. And I'm saying, oh, my God, you know, this is – then I look at the other one, and the other one is short, stocky, more muscular, has big hair, and she has these ears sticking through her hair, and she looks like she's a woman, but right there her nose goes – her eyes looks like a woman's eyes, but her nose starts off as a human's nose, but by the time it gets to the end of it, her mouth turns into a cat mouth.
Oh, God. A cat mouth.
And I'm going, okay, if that – yeah, I could see the whiskers on the upper lip, and like they've been trimmed off, and they always reminded me of porcupine.
So, like – so, Ronnie, at this moment, it occurred to you that you didn't just pick up these women from a bar.
Right, right.
Right,
and
okay.
It occurred to me that these girls probably aren't from around
here. Right, yes.
And so I'm having to come to terms with the reality that they are what they're saying they are. They're not from our world.
Wow.
And they wanted to have a conversation. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking around in my bedroom and they said, don't worry, we're not going to hurt you. Your sleeping body is, so you're perfectly fine. Your body's sleeping in bed. And then I'm starting to realize that my body's, and I tried to take a step to go look down at my own face to make sure it was me. Somebody was in my bed. And I wanted to go look down the face and see if it actually was me. So I tried to take a step, and I fell forward because unbeknownst to me at the time, I was buried knee deep in the bed. And here, I guess you have a little bit of mass, but not much. Like you can sit on the bed or you can walk the way through the bed. And it offers, when you're going through solid matter, there's a certain amount of resistance that it puts forth there. Like you can't move through it like smoke. Like you have to struggle through it. And when I tried to take a step forward, I fell forward and I put my hand on the body that was sleeping in the bed up there about the knee area. And my hand rested on just short of the knee for a second. And then all of a sudden it felt like I broke the bone and I went through the bone and I could feel the softness of the mattress underneath it. And I felt like I snapped the leg and it kind of freaked me out. And I jerked my hand back, and basically the ETs grabbed me by the arms, and they weighted me out of the bed, and then I freaked out, and I said, look, you're okay, you can move to solid matter here, you know, and they said, because I looked down to see what was going on with my knee, my legs, and it looked like my legs were cut off at the top of the bed. I could not see my legs, I could see the bed, and I thought, my God, my legs are cut off, but they weighted me out of that bed. And then I realized she goes, and you're all right. You can look at solid matter here. And then she had me put my hand on the cat lady's face. And she said, okay, now push. And I pushed my hand. I could feel her hair. I could feel her skin on her face. And when I pushed, my hand went into her head. And I could feel her brain matter inside her skull.
Yeah.
And it felt wet. But I jerked my hand back because it felt nasty. But my hand wasn't wet. But it felt wet. So I pull my hand back out, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, okay. So I'm having to come to terms with it. These two females aren't – they're really what they say in there are, and I'm really outside my body. And I can see my bedroom as plain as day. I can see the light coming around the windows. I can see the light shining into the kitchen. I can see the light shining through the windows in the bathroom into the bedroom where I'm at. It's about 9 o'clock in the morning. And then I'm sitting there talking to these two, and guess who comes walking through the bedroom?
Oh, shit.
Here comes my wife. I can see her fully dressed. She walks right by, within 10 feet of it.
Yeah.
She walks right by. It's on her way to the bathroom. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. And normally I sleep to about 11. after work when I'm working night, as long as I can possibly sleep. So I see her walk through, and I'm thinking, my God, I'm standing here talking to two females and my wife 10 feet from us, and she didn't see us. And the ET told me, said, look, this is where we've been watching the people from your world from. They said they can't see or hear us from here, but we can see and hear everything. And I'm going, my God, you know, it must be true, because I just saw it. And then here comes my wife back from the bathroom. She pauses for a second like that, and she's looking towards us. Now, the cat lady ET kind of freaks out. She looks at the blue lady that's standing there, and she goes, can't she see us? And she goes, no, she's looking at him. She pointed towards my body sleeping on the bed. And then she paused for a second, and then she went ahead and left the bedroom. And I could see her just as plain as day, the clothes she was wearing and everything.
Yeah.
And later I asked my wife, I said, you know, you came into the bedroom and you stopped and you looked over at us, and it freaked the ET out.
Yes.
And I said, why did you do that? She goes, well, because she said, you have sleep apnea and I worry about your breathing. A lot of times when you're sleeping, I will walk through, I'll pause, and I see your chest rising. I know you're breathing all right, so then I'll go about my way. You know, I actually saw her do this. I never knew that she did this, but I actually seen it firsthand, you know, and it freaked the ET out when she stopped to pause and look towards us for a second.
That's, yeah. Yeah, of course. Why wouldn't they freak out? They thought they were being watched by your wife's, like, secret powers that she has.
Yeah, and then ET, they went on to tell me this little story about how they found us. So our nuclear testing in the latter 40s sent light radiation off one of their interdimensional planets over there. And they had had an interdimensional war previously, and it freaked them out. And they had defensive countermeasures, and their defensive countermeasures didn't go off. And they investigated where the light and radiation came from, and they found our world. Okay, when they first found our world, the reason they hadn't made contact is because they were at war with the interdimensional species that had attacked them without warning, without provocation, almost as an act of imperialism, just to basically threaten them and the other planets in their community. Because where they're at is like there's many planets with intelligent species on it, and they're very close to the galactic center. And basically, I guess it's almost like a federation of planets with intelligent species on it.
I see.
And they're all working together. Well, these guys came in and they attacked the Blue Lady's planet, and they destroyed almost a third of the planet with them. And then they threatened the rest of them to do the same to the rest of them if they didn't do what they told them to do. You know, they came in and as a show of force, you know, you either do what we say or this will happen to you too. And it was an attack without provocation, and so, you know, our whole idea of all aliens being friendly and all aliens being nice, I can tell you from what these guys said that isn't true. And the reason they were so cautious after they found us in the latter part of the 40s was that they thought we might be in alliance with the guys who attacked them, because they finally drove them back and they escaped. They didn't kill them all, but they killed one of them. She said at one point they thought they were invincible because they were part of intermission crowds is being able to control math. And these guys, they had a hard time killing them. You know, they thought they were immortal for a while. And once they figured out how to kill them and they started killing them, they fled. The guys fled. And they thought we might be a staging area for the interdimensional attack that had occurred way back in the war. So they were very cautious when they first found us, when they were looking at us with suspicious eyes, like, were we in allegiance with these guys or what? And they researched us for decades, and I guess learning our language, learning our history, learning who we are, exactly how we came to be and everything else. And like I said, both these girls spoke English. They spoke it with their mouth.
And Ronnie, they told you all these things, in other words.
Yeah, and like I said, this whole thing probably lasted maybe 40 minutes. So it was a very quick verbal exchange, a lot of information being traded. You know, I still kind of remember pieces of what they said. In fact, they were wearing clothing. They had told me that their world from observing our world has already been affected, because when they observed our world, they fell in love with some of our clothing design. And the blue lady said she was wearing yoga pants and an athletic shirt. and the cat lady was wearing blue jeans and a white blouse. And she said that certain clothing items, they had ritualistic clothing that the blue lady wore on her planet, and they didn't really wear clothing. But after weeks seeing our world, the women on the world had fell in love with certain clothing items. They make them, they copied them and made them out of the products on their world, and they've become pretty popular over there. So, and they said, to the frustration of the men. Now, the men have to wait for the women to disrobe now to have sex. So she was talking to the men, like, aren't men as excited about the clothing as the women are.
That's hilarious. New trends are being set out there in alien and on alien planets. I think that's a positive thing. And Ronnie, I have to give a little backstory here on you. For those that don't know, of course, you are a oil field worker or a former oil field worker. I'm not quite sure if that's what you are currently doing still, Ronnie, or if you are retired from that.
No, I still do it.
Okay, I'm not quite sure. All right, nice. Very nice. That's what you're doing out there in Texas. And we have lots of listeners out there, Ronnie. That's one of the reasons why you are also on here. We do have plenty of listeners out there from Texas. And I thought, my God, this is a great opportunity to bring you back on, Ronnie.
Oh, yeah. I'm a crude oil transport driver, and I've done this since 1985. And I didn't see anything until 2009. I started seeing mystery lights and stuff that I couldn't explain for the first time in my whole life. And like I said, the UFO sightings increased. And then, like I said, I seen the camel abduction. Then I had the alien home invasion. And then I had the mothership fly over out in Coleman, Texas. And that mothership fly over in Coleman, Texas is an important deal because I caught some video footage of the mile-long mothership that passed over my head. And the FAA, I filed an FAA low craft report on that thing. And the FAA told me I should report my UFO to Newport, National UFO Reporting Center. And it blew me away that the FAA would describe what I seen as a UFO when I was going out of my way not to use the term UFO. And they said I should report that all known craft in the area were accounted for without incident, and that I should report my UFO to Newport. And I'm thinking, okay, well, there's like three radar sites in the area, and a mile-long craft flew over north central Texas, and the FAA doesn't know what it is. They referred to it as a UFO, and I've got some video footage of that UFO. And on the surface of that mothership, there's things that look like it's never been touched by human hand. There's creatures or stuff that just can't be explained by anything other than it's the craft from out of this world.
Right. And of course.
And it's a big deal for the UFO community as a whole. You know, why it hasn't got, it's got a lot of attention, but I don't think it's got near the attention to do that. But this is like, this is a big deal. I mean, the FAA knows, didn't know what it was. I actually got some video footage of a mile-long craft, and on that, on the footage that I captured in still frames of the video, it's not great footage, but you can zoom in, you can see creatures on the surface of this thing that aren't from Earth. And I've had zoologists look at the creatures that are recorded on the surface of this thing, and they don't know what they are, and they couldn't identify them as anything on this planet. And the fact that, you know, all these, everything lines up, and there's even a star field pattern that the astrologers have identified that give this thing a size in the sky that I said it's a mile long. It would have to be a mile long to be as big as it is between the identifiable stars and the star field pattern behind the UFO. So, you know, this is an important aspect of the UFO community as far as disclosures go. And the FAA, there's three radar sites within 150 miles of this thing, and nobody knew what it was. And I'm sure those radars caught it. So, but it's scary to think something that big could fly right over U.S. airspace, and we could sit there and not know what it is and not make the news.
Right.
It's shocking, man. I couldn't believe that it wasn't all over the news the next day. I actually had footage of it. I watched the thing fly right over the top of my head. I mean, if it had fell to the ground, we would literally need a golf cart to drive around the thing. It was a V-shaped crab. Each half of the V was a half a mile long. And like I said, it had a city built on the surface of it, and the bottom of it looked like solid rock with meteor craters and burn marks. And it looked like it was a city built on solid rock flying around like a jet in the air. And on the surface of this thing, these huge creatures were just walking around like it'd be the equivalent to a human being walking around on the wings of a 747 in flight. And the fact that that's even happening also identifies this craft as using technology that we don't have.
Yeah, and what year was this, by the way?
Living creatures on it. Yeah, there's living creatures on it, and they're walking around on the surface of the thing when it's flying through the air like a jet.
And Ronnie, what year was this when you saw this in particularly?
This was over Coleman County, Texas, in a little farming community called Echo, Texas. And I recorded this thing. It was in March the 2nd of 2011. And like I said, we filed an FAA low craft report, and the FAA, we did a phone conference call, and they basically said that all of those craft were accounted for without incident, and I should report my UFO to Newport, National UFO Reporting Center.
Right.
So, you put all that together, and that's as close as to disclosure you're ever going to get.
Pretty wild, yeah.
You got pictures of it. You got a person that actually witnessed it. You got the FAA saying they don't know what it is, and you got creatures recorded on the surface of it. And if you want to see these pictures, anybody can go to Google Images and type in Ronnie Dawson UFO picture, and you'll see some of the stuff that I caught on the surface of that mothership, and it's absolutely amazing. It will blow you away.
Very nice, very nice. And of course, you also caught the attention of Japanese media as well. You were featured on some sort of a TV show out there, correct?
Yeah, it was a Japanese version of Caught on Camera. They actually flew from Japan to Ranger, Texas, and we spent 2 days filming for about a 15-minute segment of that Caught on Camera they aired on Japanese TV, which was, even their translator couldn't speak English all that well. So I had all this Japanese in my house, and it was weird for me and my family. We'd never been on the camera like that before.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
We had sound guys, we had boom mic guys, we had lighting guys all over our house, and I think they're saying bad things to me in Japanese. I kept looking at the camera, and they were going, "Don't look at the camera! Don't look at the camera!"
That's so funny.
It was pretty hilarious.
Well, that must have been an interesting experience for you, having to go through that process. You got to see how it all works and how they all bring it together. And, all that work for about 15 minutes of airtime.
Yeah, it surprised me how much recording they did for only a 15-minute segment. It was like, man, so much footage that we had taught. So many things that were, cut on the table, They don't make it. They don't make it on TV. And you film for like 2 days.
And have you heard anything back from those people out there in Japan in regards to the story, your story? Any feedback at all? Yeah, did they give you feedback?
I'm selling a lot of books out there, so I must. Yeah, my name must be pretty popular in Japan because my book is selling pretty good over there, even though it's in English. Well, yeah, I think they actually printed a Japanese version of it.
I'm sure they did, but that's interesting to find out, because I've never really considered the I guess you can say the UFO scene, I guess you can say. I'm not quite sure how we categorize it, but how the Japanese sort of take the UFO sort of issue. I've always been curious how they consume that. Here in America, we have trends here where it's popular, and then it's not very popular, and then it gets popular again. There's kind of that endless cycle.
Yeah, I noticed on the show they would show people that would talk about seeing a UFO, and then they would bring some guys that they found that were flying drones around the building, where these people had seen it, and they were going, "Ah, no, we found the guys that were flying the drones around the building," and they laughed about it, like, "Ha, it's not a UFO, it's just drones." And these are the kids that were flying them. And they interviewed the people that thought it was a UFO, and they interviewed the people that was flying the drone. And it showed the same building, and it was, you could definitely see that, what these guys had seen and taken pictures of was drones that were being flown around this apartment building, So they kind of they show some stuff that, where the UFOs turned out not to be true. Then they show some stuff that, but I know it's on my deal. They said 100% UFO was the vote.
Interesting. And Ronnie, in regards to other people's stories in terms of abduction and, in some regards, you do hear stories of people, having sex with aliens and that sort of thing. Obviously, there are stories that are fabricated, I'm quite sure. But I was going to ask you, though, Ronnie, do you think there's more people telling the truth, or do you think there's more people, kind of embellishing their stories just to get popular? I've always wondered what you thought in regards to that. I always find it interesting what others think about that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, I think there has to be something to it because there's just too much of it out there. And some of the stuff I've heard about people having sex with insects, you know, they had no desire to have sex with an insect. And they ended up they were floating above a tired woman, forced to have sex with an insect, you know, which no, who would embellish that? Who, you know, who would subject yourself to that kind of ridicule? You know?
Right, right.
And, you know, so you have to kind of say, you know, there's a lot of this stuff and there's a lot of similarities to it too, and it's happening a lot. And you know, after my experience, I kind of came to realize that there's a reason for it. You know, people think it's this big romantic interlude with a hot alien, but you know, it's not that way out at all. It is basically sex for the reason of obtaining a genetic material.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like this romantic interlude. It's like, and I couldn't believe they wanted part of the story I remembered, I had talked to Stan Freeman and Don Schmidt out at the Roswell UFO Festival just a couple months earlier, and I said, and I had asked him, I said, you know, if I ever get a chance to talk to these guys, what should I ask them? And I think Don Schmidt said, you know, said, tell them to ask them how they got here. And then Stan Freeman said, no, he said, tell them to show you how they got here. You know, if they tell you, you might not understand. If they show you, you might learn more.
Right.
And I remember that. So when I asked him, I said, can you show me how you got here? And it kind of acted annoyed, like they were in a time frame. You know, we're on a time frame. You know, we don't have time to answer all your stupid questions, was kind of the attitude it seemed like I was getting. But they were going, yeah, it's really, you know, all you have to do is walk through this wall. They encouraged me to walk through this wall. But I had where they wanted me to walk through the wall at, there was a picture with a glass over it. So I was going incredibly slow because I was afraid when I moved through the solid matter, the glass was going to break and it cut my face. And so I was going so slow, it irritated the ET. They're going, go through, you'll be fine, just go through. And they said, just on the other side of this wall. And she said, you, and the blue lady told me, said, you can see my planet where I come from. And I'm going, what? And so I definitely wanted to see this. Right?
Sure.
So I'm moving through this picture.
Yeah.
I could feel the glass moving through my face, through my brains. I could feel the sheetrock in the wall moving through my stomach. It didn't hurt, but it was an odd, uncomfortable feeling. And you wouldn't want to just stand there because it didn't hurt, but it just felt very unnatural. So I'm moving through this wall, and there's a stud inside the wall. It went through my right shoulder. And like I said, you have some mass. And when you hit something solid, you have to really struggle through it. So when I hit that 2x4 in the wall and it hit me in the right shoulder, I had to struggle through the 2x4, not just move through it like smoke. So I'm struggling through the wall to get through it. And I think there was some miscommunication because I think she just intended for me to lean through the wall and look out of the wall. But I took it that she wanted me to walk through the wall. So I took one step, I think too many. And I ended up, I walked right out into zero gravity outer space. And off to my left is this alien planet. And it has three major continents. It has thin oceans. It has a frosty north and south pole. And it's certainly not Earth. And I'm out here probably a little bit further out than the International Space Station is. Or either that or the planet is actually a lot smaller than Earth. And so I'm taking all this in. And I'm zero gravity. And I don't need air to breathe. And during this whole experience, I was never hot or never cold. I could feel soft or hard, but I was never hot or never cold. And apparently in zero gravity, I did not feel cold out there, and I didn't need air to breathe. And I stepped out there and I realized, man, I took one step too far. Now I'm just walked out of whatever I was in. I'm floating in zero gravity. I'm doing this slow forward head flip, and I'm seeing this alien planet, and they got some kind of anomaly. Their sky looks a lot like ours, except there's a ton more stars. And in fact, in the sky, you can see the galactic center. I think it's either a black hole or something. It may be a pulsar or something, but it's something that's sucking. You can see the sun that are trapped in this thing like a black hole, and there's just thousands and thousands of planets. And I actually drew Yvonne Smith, the regression therapist out in California. He said, Ron, it's important. You know, he said, you need to draw a sketch of what you saw out there. And I did. I made a sketch of what I saw out there. And like I said, I drew a sketch of whatever I seen, and this ugly little moon floated between me and the planet. And I could see another, I thought it might have been the sun, but it was actually, I think, another moon. It was a second moon that was over there catching the light of a sun that I couldn't see. So I was actually looking at the planet in the dark side of the planet. But there's so many stars in Earth. in the sky there that it illuminates the back side of the planet. Like, it could never get completely dark there like it does here. And so even as dark as it got there, I could still see everything on the dark side of the planet. I could see the oceans. I could see the, they had a big desert area, and the desert area was the area that had been attacked and bombed and destroyed about a third of the planet. And then the next, besides it, it turned from desert area finally to like almost like jungle before it got to the ocean. And I see one large inland lake and a river running through it. Not a whole lot of inland lake, just one large one. And the oceans were thin, but they looked pretty amazing. I mean, the color of them, and you could see almost see the beaches along the edges of them. And towards the north and south pole, it almost looked like there was big mountains that dropped off into the ocean very pretty sharply. So yeah, I was taking all this in, and as I was doing the, as I was doing a head flip, I was looking back. Now I was going, okay, now I could see what I came out of, what I walked out of. And I didn't know if it'd be a ship or what. And when I looked, it was a perfectly flat crystalline box floating out of outer space. No technology on it, no lights on it, nothing. Just a black box floating in space off this planet. And that's what I had walked out of. Just like some kind of a, like inside the thing was my bedroom. Outside the thing was wherever the heck I was at. And I had no idea where this place was at. But I'm pretty sure I was a pretty good ways from home, you know.
Right.
And how it came to be there, I have no idea how they got back and forth. I don't know if this is an interdimensional travel or is it a Stargate that I walked out of or a Stargate chamber I walked out of. I have no idea.
And Ronnie, I got to ask you, are you religious at all?
I kind of consider myself spiritual, but not religious, you know. So, what, like I said, you know,
is your wife the same way?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, she's pretty much the same way. I mean,
okay.
I don't denounce God, but I don't, you know, I just know that if there is a God, I'm not it. You know?
Does this experience at all alter anything for you in regards to, you know, a God per se?
Well, I always thought when your consciousness or your spiritual essence left your body that you were dead, right?
Right.
You know, I thought that's it, game over, you know? And, but now that I've experienced being out of my body and I see my body perfectly healthy, sleeping there on bed, you know, now I almost, it changed my ideas like on people who like are in comas and stuff like.
Sure.
You could hang a sign saying, you know, this body will be disconnected in 24 hours or, you know, give a time. And like I said, if they can get back into it, you know, that way you give them, because like I said, if you could have posted a sign on the wall, I could have read it. You know, it'd have been easy for me to read it. Now, I couldn't talk to my wife, but I could hear everything she did. And like I said, I probably could have walked right through her. You know, whether she'd have felt it, I don't know. But I didn't see any ghosts walking around, you know. So yeah. Where this place is at is I don't know if this is the place you go when you die or if this is someplace different. You know, I have no idea, but I know I experienced it firsthand and it changed. I know now that. I think now the body is nothing more than a flesh suit for the consciousness.
Yeah, in other words, you're not afraid of death. In other words, Ronnie.
Right, right. So, you know, before, I thought maybe when you die, it's just like going to hell. That's it. Game over.
Yeah.
No dreams, nothing. But now that I've been there, I know that, okay, yeah, the body is nothing more than a flesh suit for the consciousness or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, so now you're like much more open-minded for these things then, in other words, these other possibilities.
Yeah, you know, I'm not one of those people who has the out-of-body experiences that do the astral travel. I'm not that guy. I've meditated twice in my whole life, didn't like it either time. You know, I'm not one of these astral traveler guys. Now, I didn't really buy into that, but, you know, now I can't say for sure that it ain't true because, after going through this experience, but I know I've never had any astral travel experiences other than this one, you know.
Well,
to get me out of my body, they had to pull me. They had to grab my arms and just pull me out, you know.
Understood.
It wasn't like I freely floated out.
Right, right, right. But
finally they pulled me back into the room, and I was like, thank God, because I'd been out there a little while and I was wondering how I was going to get back in. Now, whether I was in another universe or where I was at, I don't know. You know, even it could be that that was up inside of a spaceship floating up in orbit. And I walked out of the black box into the cargo bay of the ship, and maybe they were shooting a projection on the walls that made it look like, that showed me everything I would have seen if I'd have been to the world. I don't know for a fact that I was at another universe, or if they were just, they took me from the ground back up into a ship in outer space where there was zero gravity, and they were shooting a projection on the wall around me. But if they were, it was certainly a 360 degree projection, because every direction I looked, I could see stars and planets and stuff, besides the anomaly they had up in their sky. And it was quite an amazing sight, and I was definitely taping everything in, because I knew it was, and I couldn't recognize anything. I didn't recognize anything, but to see the anomaly that was in their sky, like a, I don't know if it's a galactic center or black hole that I was looking at. It looked like a black hole, but somebody was telling me that it may have been a pulsar, actually. Actually, I seen what looked like a gravitational wave go by over the surface of the planet. You could almost see a wave that moved across the planet at one point. And then this ugly little rocky moon went floating between me and the planet while I was up there.
Ronnie, I was just going to quickly mention, do you talk about this in the book, the Ronnie Dawson UFO story? So you do explain some of this here then?
Yeah, I added two chapters. I just added the two chapters that just happened to the end of the book, because it's an e-book. I can, as things happen, I can go back in and add new chapters to it. So this new stuff, I just got it added here. So it's in the book now. When you buy the book, the new experiences are in it. The alien sex story and the, like I said, but the thing is, you know, when I came back out of it, she grabbed me by the shoulder, and I was whipping back and forth with zero gravity, and I was afraid I was going to fly out of her grasp, because if you remember me telling me, and you don't have, it's hard to grab physical things and hold on to it. So I was scared I was going to go flying off. So I was grabbing her hand, trying to help her pull me back in. She pulled me right back to the wall, and I was back in my bedroom again, standing there with the two aliens. So they had hit me up, and they said, you know, I said, and I was sitting there, and I was talking to them, and they said, you know, I said, we've been tasked with collecting the genetic sample. And they said, would you mind giving us a genetic sample? And I thought, you know, at this point, I thought, yeah, you know, you convinced me that you are real ET, that you're from another world. And now I realize that I represent every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. And this is not the time to be selfish. And this is the time to take one for the team. Or
take one for the team.
Need to do so that we can stay in good with these guys. You know, I do what I hope anyone else would do.
What if you,
whatever it takes to be, stay good with
you. Ronnie, what if you saved the planet and you didn't even know it?
I have no idea, but I think anybody in that situation would have done the same thing. You know, I said, I told him, I said, whatever it takes for the people of your world and the people of our world to come to know each other and to be friends, you know, I'm willing to do whatever you want me to do. And I thought, okay, this is where they put me on the slab. God only knows what they're going to do to me, but the right thing to do is to take one for the team at this point, you know. And I was afraid that
you
was
went for
happen,
it,
really.
Yeah, but you went for it regardless.
Well, but the blue lady said, she said she is our geneticist, and she said that if you wouldn't mind, she could get everything that she needs just if you would just have sex with.
Jeez.
And I thought, did she say just say sex? So I had to like get her to repeat, like, okay, now what? You want me to have sex with her? And she said, yes, if you just have sex with her, she could get everything she needs.
Sure.
And I thought,
no pressure.
And, you know, and then I got the research in it later. It's like, you realize that, in 1 ounce of male semen, there's like, oh my God, there's like a several terabytes of genetic information. It's the instructions on how to build a human being, you know, amongst other things. And it was like, you know, when you're looking for a genetic sample, there's nothing better than male semen to do it with.
Evidently.
And I had no idea that male semen had that much genetic information in it. You know, it's instructions on how to build a human being.
Yeah, the building blocks of humanity, right.
Right, yeah. So I understand, you know, why that's what they wanted, but. And I thought, well, yeah, she said, you don't have to. She goes, but you would be helping us out if you would.
Okay. Thought, well, at least she said no pressure, Ronnie, you know.
There's no pressure. You don't have to, you know, but I thought, well, you know, the right thing to do is to do whatever they request you to do. If you want to stay in good with these guys, you want to do what they asked you to do. And and they're asking.
So, I would have done it too, Ronnie, by the way.
I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, the blue lady jumps. She said, I'll give you some privacy. She jumps out. So the cat lady, she takes off her skirt. She takes off the blue jeans she's got on. And I realize she's got this felt fur. She's got these beautiful black stripes that go all across her body. She's very fit. But around her waist that I didn't know that she had a tail. And my God, this is the stalk of this tail is huge. And this thing is whipping back and forth. And she told me, she said, do you think I'm as beautiful as your wife? And I know enough about women that when a woman asked you that, you'd better say yes.
Oh, shit.
Whether you believe it or not, you know, I said, yes, yes, you're very, very beautiful. And she was, you know, except for the mouth was very odd and the whiskers were odd, but the rest of her looked like a beautiful woman wearing like some fancy costume, you know?
Okay, Ronnie, but at this point, Ronnie, I have to imagine, were you asking yourself, like, where is the wife at? Like, is she out of the room? Were you safe to conduct this sort of thing? I mean, that's what's running through my head.
Well, yeah, she said, I've been watching you and your wife. And she said, I want you to make me feel like she feels.
Oh, my God.
And then she jumped up on the bed on her hands and knees.
But Ronnie, where was your wife? Yeah, but Ronnie, where was your wife, though? I'm sorry. I have to ask.
Okay. I'm getting
there. Oh, you're getting there. Oh, shit. Okay.
About this time, guess who comes walking through the bedroom again?
Oh, my God. She came back.
Yeah, it's almost like she knew something was going on.
She knew. Oh, Ronnie.
So she comes walking back through the bedroom, and the cat lady is like 5 feet from her, and she's almost she almost talked to her in English very loudly. She goes, lady, is it okay if I have sex with your husband?
Love that.
And I mean, right in front of me, and my wife would have like knocked the fire out of her.
Oh, my God.
And she walked right by. Like she said, came here. Here she is. And she walked by. And then I thought, oh, my God, you know, this is so awkward, you know.
Very awkward.
And then my wife came walking back out of the bathroom and she walked back by and she goes, it's not like you're cheating on her. She said, your physical body is right there in the bed, sleeping peacefully. And I thought, well, you know, she does got a point there. You know, it's not like I'm physically cheating. My physical body is right there.
Yeah.
Still sleep fed. You know, so where this is like my spiritual consciousness or whatever it is. But it's not my physical body.
Ronnie, I got to stop you. I got to stop you right there. Ronnie, got to stop you. There are women that will be listening to this and they're thinking, is that cheating? The fact that it, you know, wasn't a physical thing, but, you know, the fact that it was like a mental thing, you know, it was like you were mentally sort of cheating, I guess you could say, even through the astral plane. You know, some women will say that, you know, they will argue and say, wait a minute, Ronnie, you were cheating there. That's what they're going to say. Emotionally, you were. Yeah. That's what women will say.
Yeah. You know, but you also have to consider what's at stake here. The humanity. The whole human race is depending on me to be good with these guys. If you want to live like the Jetsons, you're gonna have to get along with these because there's nothing better than gifted technology.
You had to save the world, Ronnie. You had to save the world.
I drive a Toyota Sienna. I don't know anything about the thing, but I paid enough money at the dealership. They gifted me with a vehicle. You know,
right?
And that's the same way technology could be for us. You know, if we get in good with the right people, we could be flying around like the Jetsons in no time. We could live in apartments that travel around the earth. We could go to the moon on the weekend. The whole world's depending on you do the right thing here. And the right thing, morally or immorally, is to give these guys what they need at the time that they need it, to stay in good to them, to develop a relationship with the ET, that the kind of relationship we need to build. I'll do anything in my power to help you. And I'm going to have to look over, put aside my moral beliefs on right or wrong, and say, if you need a genetic sample, it's for a good reason, and I need to give it to you.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Ronnie. It sounds like that is, you know, the most rational and tangible thing to do when, you know, you look at it from this point of view. The humanity was on the line, per se. So, you know, you stepped up.
It's not my desire to have sex with an alien cat woman with my wife walking through the bedroom, you know?
Right. That's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of pressure to put on a man.
I didn't even know if I could pull it off, to be honest.
My God. But you did, though, right? You got the job done, though, right, Ronnie?
I just tried to get it over with as quick as I could, you know, as painlessly as I could and as quickly as I could. Well, anyways, I got it done. And anyway, she grabbed this, she jumped up on the bed and she put this glass speaker that had a yellow hand on it, had these lights that went up and down it. And then,
yeah.
And she jumped up on the bed and she shot the semen into this big, this thing almost looks like a syrup jar, like you might see at a pancake house. And she shot the semen in there, and I seen these lights roll through it, and then it had all these lights moving up and down the handle that she was holding. And then she was telling me about I should be proud that my children would see new worlds, and I said, well, you know, if it's children, I'll never be in worlds I'll never see, you know. So it's kind of hard to get excited about it in that context,
right?
And I said, but if you need a genetic sample, I said, there are way better genetic samples on Earth than me. And she said, no. And she said, you have to understand, we need genetic samples from the multitude of people. She said, we've gotten genetic samples before. She goes, well, we need genetic samples from the multitude. She said, do you think if we made open contact that the people of your world would give us the mass quantities of genetic samples that we need? And I said, I believe they would. I said, if we had open contact and we were on a friendly basis, I said, I don't think people here would have any problem giving you what you needed if it was for a good reason, you know. And that was part of the reason they were wanting to know it. If we were made up of contact, would we help them out? And I'm like, yeah, I believe we would, you know. And basically they told me, you know, I said, yeah, I said, I believe they would. And they said, well, you know, when it comes to open contact, they said, how should we go about it? You know, and I thought for a second, I thought, well, I said, I think you're going to have to give that guy sleeping in the bed right there, you're going to have to give him some alien technology, made of alien material that doesn't exist on this planet, that does something that we're not capable of doing. And you're going to have to give it to him so I could give it to the skeptics and scholars and prove to them that I'm actually in conversation with the ET, you guys, because they're not going to believe me. They're not going to believe what this guy says unless he has proof. And then I thought, hold on. And I thought, you know, because it occurred to me, man, you know, the government would probably just take it, put it away in a warehouse and lock me up. And so I'm thinking, you know, I said, hold on. I said, let me tell you, let me change that. I said, what I think you should do is we need a global display of alien presence. We need the whole world would have, it would be like take a big ship, fly it around the earth until everyone on the earth has seen it. That way there wouldn't be no denying it. Everybody was scared. I said it would scare some of the people, and some of the people would have to wake up to the fact that we're being visited.
Right. And there is one victim, by the way, to all of these stories. You kind of have forgot to mention this one fallen hero to the story. And that is your cat, by the way, Ronnie, who passed away.
Yes. It was tragic. You know, He was there during the alien home invasion. Yeah.
Poor cat.
He was on my bed when I was paralyzed in my bed. The cat was jumped on the bed with me, and he was watching the ET run around the living room. And then when the ET run in the bedroom and started shaking the bed that I was paralyzed on, the cat fled for his life.
So, I don't blame him.
You know, he was my one witness to the thing. And you know, at one point there were some people wanting to use my cat because there was these pet psychics.
Oh, really? Okay.
They could read the mind of pets and say what they had been through and stuff. And these guys were wanting to use my cat as a test subject for these pet psychics, to test these pet psychics on if they could actually figure out, you know, if they figure out, because and not tell them, you know, that this cat had actually seen ET and experienced an alien home invasion, and see if they could, any of them could figure it out. But it's too late now because, unfortunately, my cat Striper has passed away, and he was 15 years old. He had a good run.
He had a real good run, yeah. Yeah. Poor
well,
little guy.
He was 16. Yeah, he was 16 years old, man. So he lived a good long life.
Yeah, he did. He really did. But yes, that is our fallen hero from the story.
Right.
Poor guy.
It seemed like everybody, and my friend AO, that, you know, he was there when we shot the laser at the UFO. And he was with me when I saw the UFO, and we did the laser test, and he's passed away too.
Yeah, he's gone. You know, so I recall.
Everybody has died.
They've fallen off. Yes. So we got to keep you alive, Ronnie.
But you know, there was a group of exorcists. It was a sacred the Sacred Order of Exorcists that are in with the Roman Catholic Church contacted me, and I'm actually on their watch list. They think that these are demons and that I'm in danger of being possessed, so I'm on a possession watch list.
Oh, my.
And so, you know, I don't want to be possessed.
I was just about to ask you that. You know, in terms of the whole religion thing, that's one of the questions I was going to follow up with, was in terms of, you know, people saying those sort of things, Ronnie, you know, throughout the years we've always heard, you know, the religious folks say, you know, these things are demons in the sky.
Right. A lot of people, you know, still believe they are.
Yeah, and some people do.
Ron Fiddle, Enright, with the Sacred Order of Exorcists. And I've talked to this guy, and I love this guy, man. I believe in what he does, man. He really has done exorcism, and he is an amazing guy.
Yeah.
And he does God's work, and he has nothing but concern for me, and I appreciate that. And I've told my wife, man, I said, if my eyes ever turn black and I start crawling on the ceiling, call this guy. And I give her the contact information, you know, like call this guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
These are the guys in California that would come out and will do an exorcism. And I'm not even Roman Catholic, but they said they do some kind of little ceremony that draws me into that religion or whatever, where they can be backed by the church to do it or whatever. And I'm like, man, if my ET encounter goes south, this guy's got my back, and I appreciate that.
So So this guy thinks it's like a demonic sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the really religious people do, because they cannot buy into the concept that the ET actually exists, that there are life on another planet, and it would, you know, it just messes with their whole religious faith. And,
sure.
But you know, the odds are there's life out there, you know.
So there's got to be.
In galaxies, and my God, you know, we can't be the only one. And in fact, at one point during the conversation, I told the ET, I said, man, there are still people in my world that think we are the only planet that has life on it in the entire universe. And this blue-eyed ET, blue lady, looked at me as if to say, surely you're not serious. You know, she looked at me with this expression, man.
Like, I believe you.
You got a kid, right?
Yeah.
You got a kid, right? You, there's nobody like that, really? I'm like, yeah, there's some of the people in our world actually think that we are the only life in the whole universe. And she's like, you got to be kidding, because you have to realize the cat lady, she's from a different planet than the blue lady is. And the blue lady told me when she was trying to convince me to have sex with the cat lady, she kind of whispered in my ear. She goes, you have to understand. She goes, they have sex like the people of your world might shake hands or smile at a stranger. She goes, you have to realize that on their world, they sex is, they have sex pretty freely.
It's pretty casual. So, yeah.
And she even told me, she said, even the people of my world think it's odd. You know?
Understood. You know, there are 2 trillion other galaxies, you know, with 100 billion Earth-like worlds. So there's got to be life somewhere out there.
Yeah. But, you know, at one point after she got the sample, the blue lady told the cat lady, she said, save something for this project. And she mentioned the word clone, right? And I'm, okay, I know what cloning is, man. They're going to take some of that semen and they're going to make a clone. And they're going to make a clone out of me with this. And I'm going, oh, my God, okay, I know what they're talking about there. But they didn't go into detail what that was about, right? Okay, 2.5 years from this visitation, this happened in February 2020. They pull my spiritual consciousness out of my sleeping body, and they put it in that clone body, which was on an alien planet. And they pull, I went from my bed, and I woke up, and they were dragging me out. There was an ET, and I couldn't tell. They were wearing like PPE. They had these suits that were like shrinked around them.
Hmm.
Not like our kind of PPE, but this is a surgery room setting, and they were pulling me out of something, and I was trying to walk, and I kept trying to fall, and I was bumping into stuff, and there was this angry alien doctor that was telling them that you got to get him out of here. He can't be in here until he gets stabilized. And I'm bumping into the table. I bumped into one of their machines. They had this odd looking machine that I bumped into, and I came close to knocking it over. And this angry alien doctor was telling them, you got to get him out of here. You know, he can't be in here until he's stabilized. And they were grabbing me by the shoulders. They were walking me out of this surgery room setting. And there was an alien doctor and like 3 other like I guess nurses or whatever you call them that were dressed in this same PPE. And then there was this one, I believe it was the same cat lady, and she had a PPE on, but her eyes and her nose kind of looked the same. But
this cat, by the way, Ronnie, this cat lady seems like a troublemaker for some reason.
But they're walking me out of the surgery room. Okay, they're walking me out. Okay, there's this. It's like a wall of air, and I seen this wall of air ahead of me, and I couldn't. You could see daylight through it, but you couldn't see clearly through it. And when they started walking through it, you could see you broke the plane, and it was like pressure on each side of this wall was different. And as I broke the plane of this thing, I kind of stopped and was freaked out. I could feel the air rushing by my face. And they're going, don't stand here. We're losing our sterile environment. And they said, we got to move through this quickly. You know, don't stand in it. Walk through it quickly. So it was like the pressure on both sides of it was different. And you could feel the air rushing by you as I broke the plane of it. So I broke the plane of it. And I'm walking out of what looks like for all practical purposes, looks like a military surgical tent with a flap on it. Well, I walk out of this thing, right? And I still, you have to realize my legs aren't my... My leg, I feel fine, but when I try to walk, my leg doesn't work. Or I try to move my hand and it would like move half and then it would stop. And then I would be like trying to touch my face. And then all of a sudden it would just slap my face. So it's like my arms and my legs and stuff aren't working well. And I fell down a couple of times and these guys were grabbing me by the arms and trying to help me up. And I'm going, okay, I'm okay. And I'd let go of me and I'd take about two steps and then my legs wouldn't work and I'd fall to the ground again. And this time, it hurt. When I hit the ground, it hurt. I was in a physical body because when I hit the ground, the ground hit back. You know what I'm saying? And they were like worried about me. They're going, okay, well, stay right there, sit on the ground. And the cat lady came out and she said, look, she goes, you got to sit here. Just sit here on the ground for a minute. She goes, everything has to get aligned so everything works right. You know, I said, just stay here a couple minutes and everything will go to work. And I noticed my hands would start. They would seize up and then it'd work and they'd seize up and then it'd work. And then, so everything slowly but surely started working. And I thought, okay, well, you know, I think I'm ready to stand up again. Well, they had these two guys that were like orderlies, young, like military stout looking young man. They were wearing these weird white coveralls. Like you ever see those Jack LaLanne exercise videos from way back in before my time, even weird looking like, white coveralls, you know, with the sleeveless shirts. That's what these two orderly looking guys were wearing. I didn't know if they were androids or if they were clones, or what they were, but they were certainly stout guys and they looked like they were about 22, 23 years old, good looking guys. And then this other guy came walking up and this guy is a over heavy set, old, kind of a little bit on the overweight side. Guy, he's wearing safari pants. He's wearing a flowery shirt. He's wearing like a straw hat. And this guy is not a great looking guy, man. And this guy looks like he's on vacation, right? And I'm going, okay, this guy looks completely out of place from where I'm at, right? So this guy, he comes walking up and they stand me up and the ETs help stand me up and I'm standing up and she goes, and she tells this guy, she said, she said, I want you to meet Ronnie Dawson. And this guy goes, he goes, yeah. He goes, well, I'm familiar with Ronnie Dawson. And she said, no. She said, I mean the Ronnie Dawson from back there. And he goes, oh, my God. He goes, you're in there? He goes, your first trip? He goes, oh, my God. He goes, and then he starts getting all excited. Oh, yeah, man, it's nice to meet you. He goes, my God, it's good to meet you. And he's talking with an accent, you know, and it's like, he's talking English, but he's got the weird, like British kind of an accent. And good to meet you, you know. And said, my God, your first trip, you know. He said, I can imagine, you know. And I'm sitting there, and she goes, well, I'm gonna go back in here. She's like, I gotta go back in here. And she goes, you just stay out here until you get everything working good, you know. So the cat lady with the PPE on, she leaves. I'm talking to this guy, and I'm going, I said, who are you? And he said, I'm Jonathan Belisi, I believe. And he said, where are you from? I said, where are you from? How'd you get here? He said, I'm from South Africa. He said, I'm here for the same reason that you are. He said, I'm here for the penile augmentation.
What?
And I said, what? And I thought when he said penile augmentation, I'm going, okay, they're talking about my penis, right? So what? I run my I pulled my stretchy shorts out and I looked up down there, and my God, there wasn't a penis down there. This thing was like a handful of guts down there. And I said, "Oh hell!" He goes, "Yeah." He said, "I'm gonna be the second one to have the procedure." He goes, "You were the first." And I'm going, "Oh my God!" And he said, "I guess you figured out we're not on Earth." I said, "Man, I was wondering where we're at, you know." And he said, "Well," he said, "look at that sun. That'd be your first clue." And I looked at the sun. You could actually stare. This sun was much bigger than our sun in the sky, and you could actually stare at it for a few seconds. And I mean, you could look at it for a couple of seconds, and you could see it had fiery areas and red areas. It was almost like flame was dancing across the surface of it. And you couldn't look more than a couple of seconds at it because it was still bright. And the area looked sunny, and there was rolling hills, grass, tall grass everywhere, not one tree. And there was like 200 houses in this valley, and every one of the houses was identical. It almost looked like a military base, and they had these white picket fences around them. I didn't see any personal items on any of the houses. The houses had a series of roads that ran between them. And like I said, I worked in road construction. I know how to build roads. And when I was sitting on the curb trying to get everything working again, I looked down at the road and I could see that it's because, you know, we spray asphalt down and we spread gravel on top of it. Well, this road wasn't built like that. It looked like a road, but you could see that the rocks that were in the surface of it were all the same size, and it was more of a clear, like almost like a silicone glueish kind of stuff. It looked like a road material, but it certainly wasn't a road like we build a road. But it looked and felt like a road, but it certainly was. It was an alien copy of what we would call a road, but not. They had roads running through all of these houses, and every one of these houses was identical. And you can see the roads that run through them. I didn't see anybody in any of the houses or anything. So I have no idea. But these houses are like 1950 style houses where they built the porch into the house under the primary roof. You know, they don't scab on to the – nowadays we scab on. We build porches, you know, outside the main structure of the house. But back in the 50s, they built them – under the main structure of the house. So all these places look like some kind of a military base or something like that. And the tent that all this surgery thing was in, it looked like a military tent.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah.
And also one of the parts that I forgot was the ET had told me, she goes, she had apologized. One of the first things she said, she said, "I'm sorry we had to give you a vaccination and on the back of your left leg to protect our interest." And I looked on the back of my left leg, there was nothing. And she said, "No," she said, "back there." She said, "back there," you know. And I didn't think about it, but, you know, after all this was over and I went back the next day, I looked, my wife said, "What's that on the back of your leg?" And there was a triangle mark on the back of my left knee, right where the ET had told me that they give me the vaccination. And I actually took a picture of it.
I got to see that photo.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
That was the ET vaccination that they give me. And anyway, so now I'm looking, you know, I'm talking to this Johnson guy. I was thinking, you know, when he told me his name, Belisi or something like that, I'm going, why couldn't it have been Jones or Smith or something like it? I'm still going, I want to try to find this guy and find out if he's still, you know, if he's still around in South Africa or what the deal. But he said that he volunteered for this. He said they were looking for contact. He's over the age of 50. Who were having sexual dysfunction that were willing to go through this procedure, was what he told me.
You got to find them.
And he said his reward for doing this was they were going to bring his wife. They were going to bring his wife to him, and she was going to get to spend time there. And he was going, she's going to be, she said she never believed my alien or UFO story. He goes, she's going to be shocked when she comes here.
She's going to have a heart attack.
Yeah, I'm thinking, yeah. When she sees that 17-inch augmented penis that they put on you, she's really going to be shocked, you know. My God.
What is that like?
Well, she came back out. She goes, she said, "Ronnie, the last time we talked, he said, you're willing to do whatever it takes, you know, for the people of your world and the people of our world to get together." And she said, "You can see we've had an augmented penis put on the clone." And she said, "You're basically here for the function test." She said, "We have a young female." They said that the augmented penis is better interact with the cat species. And she said, we have a young female in here who's going through an estrous cycle. Now, you have to realize the estrous cycle, estrous is not a word in my vocabulary. I have no idea what estrous was. Never used that word in my whole life. Never heard that word, I don't think of, in my whole life. But the estrous cycle is a heat cycle. And estrous, they say that cat's in heat. It's driving the tomcat crazy, you know. But the estrous cycle is actually the cycle of a cat where she's in heat to be bred, to have part of the reproductive process, you know. And I had to look it up on Google later, you know. So, you know, that's another one of my proof that it's like, who would have a dream and use words that's not in their vocabulary? You know, nobody's ever done that. And nobody's ever remembered, had dreams that you can remember this kind of detail, you know. And they told me at one point, they said, you know, this is not a state of sleep. This is a reality, and you'll remember every aspect of it. And when the people in your world meet the people of our world here, because it's safe from viral and bacterial harm and physical violence. He said, this is when the people of your world meet us here, they will remember every aspect of the conversation when they go back. She said, it's an alternate reality. It's not a state of sleep. And I believe that's what this is, because I've never had a dream where I can remember this kind of detail. You know, well, she comes back out and she's gone, you told us you were willing to help us any way you could. And she said, are you still willing? And I said, yeah, you know, I didn't know what I was actually getting myself into when I made this arrangement.
Right.
But I'm here, and they're holding me to my word. I shouldn't have said it if I didn't mean it, but they're holding me to my word, and I'm here. And we got the young cat female in there. She's flying here to help us out. She's going through an estrous cycle, and it would help to, she goes, if she's bred, she will get out of the estrous cycle quicker, and it would help her out as well to volunteer. She has volunteered to help in the function test, and she said, they're in there right now waiting. They're waiting on us, and they're not. And I'm going, like, you know, it's like we're on the time schedule, we're here, we're ready to go, you know? And I'm like, okay. So, all right, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm on the hill. So she pulls this stuff out, squirts it under my nose. It smelled like a cross between sunflower and cat piss. And she sprayed it underneath my nose. And the next thing, and she told me, she said, you're going to take off your shorts, or it's going to hurt if you don't. And I had this slide these shorts that I was wearing off, and it's like stretchy shorts. I stretched them off, and I noticed that they had like Converse shoes on this thing, but you could tell they weren't real Converse shoes. These are alien reproduction Converse shoes. The toes weren't right. But I know what Converse shoes look like, and they had two socks on this thing. Man, you wouldn't catch me dead wearing a pair of two socks, man. Maybe back in the 70s I would have, but I hate two socks now. And then this clone body was wearing two socks and these Converse shoes and wearing these stretchy shorts, man. And I pulled these shorts off, like I said, this thing was hanging down there. My God, it was like hanging down to my knees.
Jeez.
And I told the gunner, I said, my God, man, that thing must be 2 feet long. He goes, no, it's 17 inches. He said, they told me it was 17 inches, not a bit longer, not a bit shorter, exactly 17 inches. And he acted like he's almost got offended. And I said, no, I believe, you know. I said, I do concur, man. I said, that looked like exactly about 17 inches, you know. And he goes, it is. He goes, it's exactly 17. He said, they made a point to point that out, you know. And I said, all right, well, and he sprayed that stuff under my nose. And this thing, man, it stood up like a flagpole. I mean, right up immediately. This thing is not big around, but it's long and skinny. And I'm thinking, oh, hell. And she said, well, they're waiting on us. So we go marching in the tent. We go through the air wall. And I'm in there. Okay, this time there's this cat woman. She's climbing up on this operating table. And she's strapping her ankles down herself. So I know she's not a prisoner because she's strapping her own ankles down. And then she puts her hands back. And they spread the table apart where one leg goes to the right, left leg goes to the left. And then they start wrapping her ankles down. And this cat female, she's younger than the other one, and she looks different. She's white and with the same black stripe. And you can see she's got black hair. She's got more of a rounded face. She doesn't have her whiskers trimmed off like the other one did. Her whiskers are long and kind of hang down maybe 10 inches out of her top lip. And they're not near as big and thick as the other one is. And she just has the appearance that she's a lot younger. And And anyway, so I go walking in there, and like I said, the doctor, his three nurses, and then the cat lady with the with all the PPE on is there as well. And so there's like a crowd of us in there. And this angry doctor, he goes, when you're having sex, and he said, when you feel like you're fixing a jacket, he said, leave it. He said, I want full penetration and leave it there. So he's like barking instructions at me, you know, right here before I'm even having sex with this gal. She's done strapped herself in the table. They told me for my own protection. And anyway, so I get it away as quick as I can. And my God, there's a lot of stuff came out. Like I said, the sex stuff around the ejaculation part was like almost like a byproduct of having sex. You wouldn't want to trade our ejaculation for the ejaculation of this thing. For sure.
Jeez.
It wasn't, you almost couldn't feel it when it happened. But I just know, it happened. And then I was still in that angry doctor was looking at me like, wait a minute. Okay, no, hold still right there. Hold still, you know? And it was like coming out the rear end and stuff. And I was like, all right. And it was dripping on the out of the table on the floor. He's like, all right. He goes, he said, okay. He said, you might want to leave now. I said, we're going to do, we got to do more of a procedure, intense procedure. He goes, you're not going to want to stick around for it. And so they walked me back through the wall, back outside where everybody else was at. I walked through the air wall again. I'm standing there, and this Jonathan guy, he's over there. He's looking at me, and so anyway, I'm wondering, you know, what is going on here, man? And the other two guys are standing out there. Where the cat lady, she comes out, and it ain't very long afterward, you know. And she's carrying something in her hand, and it's a bag. And inside the bag, and she hands it back to me. She goes, she said, okay, she said, what we want you to do is, she said, this is the female reproductive organ. And she said, we want you to put this on your penis, put this on the penis, and see if it's long enough to reach the opening in it. And I'm thinking, my God, how am I going to do this? This is like a bag of gut. And she said, well, these guys can help you. She sends over these guys. She said, they're willing to help you. She said, they'll help you. And I said, well, I said, first of all, you know, I said, we went over to where the picket fence was. We sprung the guts over the picket fence to the part where the open end is. He sprayed the stuff under my nose again. Well, I felt stupid because everybody's sitting there looking at me. I thread this basically, this organ is hanging over this fence over this erect penis again. Because, I mean, so she sprayed that stuff under my nose again. It stood right back up again. And I threaded that thing over the end of it. And you can see a hole in it. I guess maybe that's the hole where the semen goes into something else, where maybe the eggs are or something. Anyway, I said, look, yeah, you can see the end of it right here. And I said, yeah, you know, that's good. She said, well, if you don't mind, she goes, slide it up and down and see if you can orgasm at it again. And I'm going, oh my God. I got four people sitting here watching me. I was supposed to jack off with this piece of gut hanging over a picket fence. You stir it, man. You know, how awkward. And I'm thinking, well, I split it up and down a little bit, and I'm going, look, I don't feel anything. I don't feel like anything's going to happen. So I pull it. She goes, all right, well, that's fine. She goes, so I pull it off just to put it back in the sack. So we gathered it up. We put it back in the sack that she brought it in there. And then all of a sudden, this penis starts, the ejaculate starts coming out of the end of it, and it grips on this fake Converse shoe that right on the toe of it. And I'm looking at, and this Jonathan guy, he chuckles. He thinks it's kind of funny. And I'm kind of looked down in frustration because this shit just ripped out of it on the shoe that I was wearing. And she goes, well, catch it, you know, catch it in the sack. So whatever is dripping out of it, they catch it in the sack along with the book. So, anyway, she said, all right, she said, we appreciate you helping us here. We thank you. And she said, we need to get you back. And I said, well, you want me to go back in the tent? She said, no. She said, just sit down right here on the curb. And she grabbed it. I don't know. She seemed like she has kind of a little device in her hand or something. And she said, just sit right here. She said, these guys can carry you back in when it's time. She goes, but we don't want you to fall down like before. She said, so just sit down here. And she had me lean against the counter, lean against her legs. And I think she put something on my head. The next thing you know, I'm back. Back in my body, back in Ranger, Texas, in bed, and I wake up, holy shit. And I felt really rested for some reason, man. After all this stuff went down, I woke up, man. I feel really refreshed, you know. And I remember every stinking detail.
No, why wouldn't you feel refreshed?
And when you take your spiritual consciousness out of your body rests really well.
You got everything taken out of your body that time, yeah.
But I didn't think about the mark on the back of my leg. You know, I got up and I went to work and I came home in the afternoon and I was in the bathroom and I think I was taking a shower or getting a shower and my wife said, "What is that on the back of your left?" And I looked and I'd been scratching the hell out of it all day long because it itched like crazy. And then it hit me. I was going, "Holy crap!" I remember. She said that they did something to the back of my left leg, and there it was. There were the marks on the back of my left leg.
The vaccine.
Yeah, I got to get a picture of it. So I got a picture of it. You know, I had the physical evidence, the back of the story. You know, it's like this is the physical evidence, the back of the story. I got to get this.
That's very interesting, by the way. This whole story. You know, we've heard all about, you know, like grays and different alien beings out there. You know, wanting to sort of have this sort of experience with humans because the story goes in terms of the grays. You know, I've heard all kinds of theories, but one of the theories is that, you know, they cloned themselves so many times that they kind of weakened their production system. So, you know, they really can't reproduce the way, you know, the way that humans can.
I have a theory too.
Go ahead. I want to hear this.
My theory is that just like the little aliens that ransacked, they are subservience of these other guys. And I believe the gray aliens are subservience. I think they're a viral resistant species that they can. And they told me their brother worked with an example. And like the sample they worked with there, they had to synthesize because it wasn't raw sample because I was out of my consciousness. I was out of my physical body. And she told me that brother worked with raw material. She said they had to synthesize it. And then she went on to tell me the genetic modifications they make and how they they design it for whatever planet they're going to use it on, basically. And the modifications that it would go through and all this. Man, she went, you know, into a lot of detail on stuff that I didn't know anything about. And at one point, the blue lady told me, she said, to tell everybody, to tell the people of your world that when we make open contact, that all that we ask is that there be no physical contact without first asking permission and getting the permission, get it granted. You know, you want to ask permission before you make physical contact with them and get a remark of approval. You know, so basically what they asked is like they want you to ask before you shake their hand. May I shake your hand? May I hug you? And then they say yes or no. And she said that's all they ask. And that sounded to me like they're trying to set up a first rule of contact, really. You know, I can't remember the exact wording that she used, but it was, it sounded like a first rule of contact, like make no physical contact unless you ask permission and the permission is granted.
Yeah.
And by both parties.
And Ronnie.
By both parties.
Ronnie, and just to, you know, I don't really mean to take our attention away from the subject off entirely, but I did want to redirect your attention to the whole, you know, the whole soft disclosure from the Pentagon recently. You know, wasn't really anything I was expecting or had any hopes for, to be honest with you. I wasn't really expecting any sort of tangible answers from the Pentagon in regards to UFOs or anything they've been studying for the last, I don't know, 40 years now.
Right.
What do you make of that, by the way, Ronnie? Just really quickly here before we go back to the sexual energy exchange between humans and grays.
You know, I'm just happy that the government is to some degree coming forward and saying, yeah, we're seeing stuff and that we don't know what it is, basically is what they're saying. And they've been saying that, but you know, but now it's causing more questions. People want to know now if, you know, how can you just sit there and not know? You know, you got stuff flying around your ships and your warheads and over our airspace and you can't do anything about it. You're not worried about it, you know? And so now it's causing more questions, but you have to realize, you know, they're kind of in a sticky situation, really. Because, you know, even if they come out and say, yeah, we've known about aliens and, And we've known him for quite a while. And then the next question is going to be, oh, really? Well, what have you done to protect that secret? Have you killed? Have you killed people to protect that secret? Who have you killed? Who killed them? How have you killed them? You know, did you kill Phil Snyder? Who all did you kill? You know, so there's sticky questions on down the road. And, I'm just happy to see them come out to some degree and say, yeah, you know, not only are normal people seeing this stuff, so is the military seeing this stuff. We've always known there were. I mean, I don't need the government to tell me that ET exists. I know when I've seen them firsthand, you know, I don't need it. But I want a government that is honest with the people. You know, I want a government that's honest with me. I don't want a government that beats around the bush and tries to decide what I need to know and what I don't know. I'm a big boy. I can handle the truth. I've had to handle the truth. Like I said, man,
right.
I had to handle the truth the hard way. I looked AT in the eye, you know.
Ronnie, why do you think the government is like that, by the way? Well, why do you think they just can't come out and just say, you know, aliens do exist?
I think it's because they don't want to stop the religious community.
Is that what it is? They have such a stronghold on the religious people.
Yeah, they don't want to wreck your religious beliefs it would by coming out and saying, hey, ETs exist and the Bible don't say anything about it. But that don't mean there is or there isn't a God. I mean, there's plenty of room for God and ET.
I'm sure there is. Well, we don't know that for sure. So, you know, you can't really be that negative about it.
And in fact, you know, when the ET has said that the people that they had been at war with were very similar to our descriptions of the fallen angel. Because like I said, so they have researched them us enough to know that, man, when the people that attacked them and that they were at war with were very similar to the description of our fallen angel. And maybe Earth was a staging area for that interdimensional attack. You know, we don't know that. And in fact, I wonder if they found us in the latter part of the 40s, maybe that's who shot the Greys down over Roswell. You know, it's kind of funny how, you know, you don't be an interstellar traveler and then fly to Earth and crash.
Right.
So maybe these guys found the Greys. Maybe the Greys were in collusion with the other guys that they were at war with, and these guys took them out.
Never know. You can't rule it out.
We found them there at Roswell, you know, so we wonder if they didn't just crash. Maybe they didn't crash. Maybe they were shot down.
Maybe
the pyramids themselves are the leftover remains of an interdimensional weapon system.
You never know. And, you know, you can't really rule these things out because just a few years ago, Ronnie, if you told me that there would be some sort of like flu-like virus out there, I would have told you that you're full of crap, Ronnie. So, you know, we can't really rule these things out. Not anymore.
Like I said, they didn't tell me all the answers. And it's like every time I met with these guys, they have an agenda. They're very agenda focused and they're in a hurry and they don't have time to be sitting around asking a bunch of stupid questions that Ron has. But it's like I said, I think the best thing I could probably do is to do everything they asked of me and to stay in good with them. I think I'm in good with them. I think they kind of like me. And I'm going to keep this conversation. I'm going to, you know, keep this conversation going as long as I can. I'm going to try to help them in any way I can. And I'm doing it for not just Ron, I'm doing it for everybody.
Right. And Ronnie, we are coming to a close very soon here. And I do appreciate your time with us. I know we're going to do a shorter interview here, but we kind of went over the time here because we've had such a great time, me and you here.
Yeah, I know. It's a long, long story.
Oh, yes.
It takes so long to tell it, you know.
I know, and we haven't really even got into it too deeply here, but of course, you know, you will return soon and we'll get more into all the rest of the story here. But of course, Ronnie, I did want to just quickly mention anything else that you have coming up, if you do, any more conferences or any more appearances anywhere, anything of that nature.
Yeah, like I said, the Ronnie Dawson UFO story is out there. It has the last two chapters that I added in that happened in 2020 in it. So you can, it's an ebook for like $4.99 is all. And I think there are people buying printed versions of it. I didn't know they even made printed versions of it, but they're printing copies of it. They have the pictures in it. And like I said, if you want to see some of the pictures I've caught along this journey, just go to the Google Images and just type in Ronnie Dawson UFO pics.
Very nice. And Ronnie, just another hypothetical question just to ask you here. I'm going to throw this one out there. Once in a while, I'll ask a guest this random question. But, you know, let's say our alien friends did come down and they have this sort of technology that could take you into the future, let's say, and they proposed an offer for you, Ronnie. They said, well, Ronnie, we will take you to another planet and, you know, you could do whatever you want. You'll have plenty of money and blah, blah, blah. But what we're going to do is we're going to take you on this planet and you'll have front row seats to when the Earth pretty much ceases to exist. Would you accept their offer, Ronnie, to sort of, you know, colonize a planet on your own away from any other human? So basically, it's just going to be you and these sort of aliens. And, you know, what they want to do is start some sort of like, let's say, like a hybrid program. And, you know, they chose you, Ronnie, but, you know, in return, they kind of want you to watch the Earth sort of end, basically.
Right.
Would you take them up on that offer?
It'd be tough, you know, because, you know, I got a wife and kids that depend on me here, you know. They'd be lost without me. So, you know, I kind of have some abandonment issues I have to work through, you know, with my family. But
yes, and age doesn't matter. And age doesn't matter, Ronnie. They're going to extend your life even further.
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, you'd have to go for that, you know.
They're going to make you younger.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and if they ever do figure out how to travel back in time, man, I guarantee you I could take everybody back to the big mothership flyover in Coleman, Texas. And
what if they said no, that they can't do that? It's just you, though, Ronnie.
Oh, yeah, you would have to.
You would go for it?
Yeah, you would have to.
Take the adventure? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I might have to do the same, Ronnie.
I'm 60 years old, so, you know, I ain't got that much longer left anyway, so. I might as well make the best of it, you know.
Might as well make the best of it. Once again, Ronnie, do want to thank you for being a part of the program. It's always a honor and pleasure to have you here, Ronnie. So we will definitely do this again very soon. It won't be another couple years from now. We'll do it much sooner this time.
All right. Well, thank you, Michael. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much, Ronnie. We'll talk again soon, my friend.
All righty.
Good night.
Good night.
And there he goes, boys and girls. That was Ronnie Dawson. Fantastic. I told you we were going to have a bit of everything here tonight. We had some COVID talk. We had the alien talk. A little alien sex. I mean, what else could you ask for? I want to thank all of you out there for hanging out with me this evening. I feel like I could have been here a bit longer, but I was here for a good time, not a long time, as all of you know that by now. Now, folks, keep in mind, I'll be doing more shows again. I'm going to be more active here on YouTube and, of course, on Patreon. This episode was actually supposed to be for those on Patreon. Please sign up ASAP. If you are a long-time supporter, definitely sign up. You'll get the history of the show, how it all formed. You'll get a better understanding about me, about the show. Regardless, if you are just here for the free show, that's cool too. I can respect that. But for those who want more, patreon.com/MichaelDeacon. I think somebody was even bootlegging a few episodes recently. Listen, it's something else when I find my own show on some random torrent somewhere. You like the show, I get it. I'm flattered, but remember, if you like the show, definitely sign up. $3, $4, $5. That's all it takes. Low price for high entertainment, baby. Yeah, just the way you like it. Don't forget to take us on the road, by the way. We do have the podcast version available for all of you out there. I recommend CastBox. That's kind of my favorite, but don't worry, we do got your back. With Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, we got all of that. Just search Michael Deacon. Before we part ways and go on our separate ways, I do want to thank all of you out there for pressing play. It warms the soul. International listeners out there, thanks for hanging out with us once again. It was a good time. Please stay safe, everyone. Reporting to you live, direct from El Centro, California, my name is Michael Deacon. And I'll see you in a dream. And with that said, the world is a mysterious place, and life itself is a mystery. Until next time, good night, everybody. We'll be right back.
Is it okay if I have sex with your husband?
Mike in Montclair. What's up, Mike?
Governor, next time you want to sit on a beach that is closed to the entire world except you, you put your fat ass in a car and go to one that's open to all your constituents.
Well, you know,
not just you and yours.
Interesting, Mike. You know what?
What's that, Gov?
You know, Mike, I love getting calls from communists in Montclair.
Communists in Montclair.
You know,
you're a bully, you Governor, are, no, and I don't like bullies.
You know what? And listen, I'm not the one who came on the air. Hey, hold on, Mike. Mike, I'm not the guy who came on the air, swore on the air.
Who swore?
And so you did.
I got to kick the heck out of you.
Yeah, you know, you're swearing on the air, Mike. You're a bum.
You know,
bad optics.
Okay?
Mike,
and
I'd love to come look at your optics every day, buddy. And you know what, Mike? What matters is what you do. That's what matters.
And what have you done?
What I just did was stop.